Hey guys, so I'm Gaurav. I work at Shopkick, and I'm here to talk about how every PM is a growth PM. So just a background on me before I start. I've been at Shopkick for about 9 to 10 months, and Shopkick's an app where you get rewarded with kicks every time you go shop. Kicks is just a secondary currency, so you can redeem that amount and get gift cards and keep buying. It's basically a virtuous cycle, and we partner with different CPG brands as well as retailers to do that. Before Shopkick, I was at Zillow Group as well as Trulia, and over there I focused on the rental consumer and really tried to make help people find apartments for rent. So, without further ado, what I'm really here to talk about is let's go back to your last first day at whatever company you're at. When you enter that company, what you really think about is I'm in this org, I'm in this single organization, I'm trying to do this. This is my role. But the real focus that everyone kind of forgets after a while is that we're all focused on one thing, which is growth. Growth is role agnostic, it does not matter, and it's a mindset. So if you took a look at that person in that image, you can't really say if it's a PM, you can't say if it's a marketer, it could be a salesperson. Everyone's really focused on growing the ROI of the company, growing revenue, and that should be the ultimate goal. So as a product manager, you should be out there enabling that. So like I said, we all have the same goal to grow the business. So I'm gonna give you a couple of tips and some examples of how I do that in my daily job, and something maybe you can employ in your daily role as well. So going back to that, we also have a lot of obstacles. When you have so many different resources there, as a PM, you're really trying to manage that. You understand that you're competing for resources. You all think that every single function thinks that their specific project is the most important project. You're trying to figure out how do you decide that's the one that really matters. So you need to, I think the ultimate thing is grow the company, not your castle. A lot of us get carried away in thinking, oh yeah, this is my project, it's just gonna be what I do, and it's gonna help me grow in my specific organization. But if you focus on the ultimate company ROI, focus on company metrics, and always focus on the company KPIs, then, no one's gonna disagree with you, and you're gonna end up actually pushing the company more and actually growing revenue that way. So tip number one, orient your team around growth. So on the right side, I basically have three things that I do in my daily life to kind of help the team think about growth. At Shopkick, we operate in a pod structure, and also we did a Trulia and Zillow. And what pods basically is you're integrated, all the different teams are integrated within the product team. So there's a product owner, there's also an engineering lead, all the engineers are there. If you have a salesperson as part of that, they're also attend stand-up, all that kind of stuff. So the thing is, you should really have all your stakeholders at your stand-ups. You need to help them understand what's going on day to day, and help them understand what metrics are happening, how's your product performing, because that would help, let's say it's a salesperson, it would help them sell better. If it's a marketer, it would actually help them understand whether they're marketing the product in the right way. There's so many different ways that you can do that. And at the same time, you can actually have a bunch of transparency of data and results. So for example, whenever I noticed, for especially with the engineers I work with, if I don't tell them about what's happening day to day with data and with KPIs, they're not as excited about what they're doing, it's because they don't feel involved in the business. And it's important to not think of yourself as someone you're telling engineers what to do. It's more that engineers are actually doing the work. So it's important to think about it that way, and helping bring that transparency with your product will actually get that done. The first one, actually, I wanted to say that for last, is experiment poker. It's just a fun game that I usually play whenever we do an A/B test. So every time we run an A/B test on a product feature, I send out an email that says it's called experiment poker for this specific feature. And I'll say, here's the success metric of this feature. Everyone now can guess in this Google form what percentage it will improve by. And at the end of it, you'll have a $20 third place prize. It's not really about the prize. It's actually just like getting people excited about the product, about the feature. And as you do that, I joined my Shopkick team at a time when people weren't super excited about what the product feature was and what they're doing. It actually got people arguing about data, arguing about the improvements they're making, and it got people pumped up about it. So at the end of the day, that's really what you're trying to get people excited about. It's about growth within your team, and then that will succeed into growth within your product. So tip number two is you should really try to learn another language. Like I said before, as a product owner, you're really not trying to, you don't want to keep talking about yourself as just a product owner. Everyone is part product owner. They're all stakeholders there. So if it's an engineer, if it's sales, marketing, design, they're all part of your team. And you should try to understand how they do their jobs, because if you don't understand that, it's going to be hard to communicate. It's going to be hard to kind of work through that. And honestly, you know, think about, let's look, use companies like Warby Parker or, you know, Apple, whatever you want to say. Their leaders were not product managers. They were designers or they were marketers. They have great brand images for a different reason. And I think we should all just recognize that and, you know, understand what makes your company great and enable that. That's what really will help your company grow. For me, an example I like to use is, when I was at Trulia, I launched the rental messenger bot for Facebook, and front end is still in beta. And this was a really interesting experience for me because it was maybe like a month or two after it was launched, like the Facebook messenger bot was actually launched. And we were working directly with Facebook to get this live. And we did this in about 3 to 4 weeks. And it was the first time I had like a very PR-centric feature. And this was really interesting because I was working very, very closely with the PR person at Trulia, and then I got to understand, oh wow, this is when you actually have to ship by this specific date. Here in B2C, you usually don't have that. Usually it's different than B2B, where you don't really have dates all the time. You're kind of just saying, okay, yeah, I'm gonna ship by this sprint, I'm gonna try to get it done by then. But this was like, you have to have this feature launched by X date, otherwise these different magazines or these online editorials will not feature you. And so that was a very interesting experience for me, and that made me really respect the PR function as well as marketing and understand how they do their role. And the more I did that, it got me thinking about, I should do this for every function. And I should really try to understand how they do their job, because if I understand that, then they'll understand how I do my job, and that'll just all work better. So tip number three is really just, post success, remember to, you know, reset the goals and iterate, because a lot of times, everyone falls into this, like product managers, we tend to, you know, once you work with the team really hard, launch a feature, you can tend to go on a lull right after and say, all right, it's time to rest a bit. We can, you know, relax for a minute and then go back into it, but it's a trap. The idea is you need to iterate, you need to think about resetting the goals, and always have a North Star. If you don't have a North Star, then you're not going, you don't really, it's important to have project goals, but it's important to have a North Star on top of that goal. So at Shopkick, what we do is, obviously, I don't know, I'm sure a lot of companies that you guys work for use OKRs, but it's important to set your OKRs like very well at the beginning of the quarter. So even after that project that you've been working on the entire quarter, or that entire like month has finished, you can be like, okay, well, we're still not done. We launched this amazing feature. We bumped up this metric by X percent. But now it's time to go on to the next thing. And then everyone is on board, because if you've done tip one and two, everyone's already excited. So that's kind of the idea that I'd like to use. And yeah, that's it. Thanks. Yeah, do you guys have any questions?
You talked about setting OKRs. Can you give an example from your experience? What kind of objectives you set, and how do you measure those key results?
Yeah, so at Shopkick, we, when I started, I was working on a receipt feature, receipt submission, and when I joined, it was extremely low, and it was focused on like improving the user experience of it. So we had to look at, for it was pretty straightforward, because for us it was award rate. If you submit, how many receipts that are submitted are awarded. how many people receive kicks for it. Because if you are not receiving kicks for it, that means you're not having a good user experience. But at the same time, that's only one of our objectives. You kind of want to think about what's your end goal, whether it's user experience, whether it's revenue, whether it's a combination of that, maybe it's retention. But then if that's the goal, then you want to set, usually there's three objectives that you set. And so those three objectives, you want to orient them around that, and then go about that.
Can you maybe talk about some of your favorite growth hacks, or maybe some products
that you have on your own? Yeah, growth hacks-wise, I mean, we use AppBoy a lot.
AppBoy?
Yeah. So I think in terms of, for us, one of the biggest quarter is Q4, because that's when everyone shops. And that's when we make, like, I think 30, 40% of our entire revenue. And so during that time, we do a lot of A/B testing just to get people into the app and start to do stuff. So AppBoy is one that's really awesome, where you can send out pushes and in-app messages and also A/B test that within there. So it's really easy to do stuff without engineering help. So that's, I think, is like a really awesome tool to use. Previously, like I used to love using like Optimize before when I was at Trulia, and Optimizely, obviously, but after React, it's kind of hard to use Optimizely, so it's different. but on, I think in terms of growth hacks, I think it's all about going back to MVP, like minimum viable product. If you don't always think about how you can bring whatever feature you want to test down to that, like the lowest level of feature set, then you're not really doing growth. You're building waterfall again, so.
What percentage you were able to increase revenue in your first project? I mean, I just wanted to understand that. So, in terms of growth perspective, so is it like exponential early increase, or is it like 10%, 20%? How do you start? Like, if I want to target, for example, they show me some situation, okay, these are the metrics, and I think like this is my goal, and I want to increase it by 10%. So is this the right thing which I will think upon and gradually I will try to decompose my goals into subtasks to achieve that? Or is it kind of like 10% is too minimal thing, or in corporate world it is like 50%? It's like that.
I think it's important to understand first what your metric is, because you can always, when you look at the data, you can cut it different ways. And like, I'll give you an example. When I was at Trulia, at my first, I started off doing growth and conversion optimization. And during that time, I was just optimizing a funnel on rentals. And like, sometimes you just have to set a goal and then try to reach it. And you'll end up finding out what data, what are the different ways you can do it. But if it's like a funnel, for example, then you can look through each of the funnel steps and figure out where the holes are. And then you can find out what's like achievable, like optimization that you can, or improvement you can get there. But otherwise, usually I usually just start off with like putting an A/B test. If I usually try to measure something, but if I can't, it's okay sometimes to say 5%, because you want to get there, and you'll figure out through your feature how you can get there through the data, like cutting the data different ways, is how I think about it. But I think for me, I always look at whether it's a funnel. I look at the funnel and think about there's two ways to improve a funnel, right? You can either expand it or like improve it in the example. And so I try to look at the data first and then try to estimate how much.
So are there times that you cannot really run A/B tests on coding?
Sorry.
Like, are there times that you cannot run A/B tests on features?
So far, I haven't had many cases. Usually, you know, the only time I don't run A/B tests is if it's a small improvement, or whether it's something that I'm like just 95% sure because it's been done before, it's not going to impact any metrics. But usually it's always good to just try to, is there a case you're talking about specifically?
Yeah, like some major features that's going to interact with everyone. So what if you're doing a network kind of feature or a part? And so the way to launch it is to launch to everyone.
So, I mean, that's interesting. But then you could probably do an A/B test within regions. Right. If you're launching a network, you could probably do an A/B test by doing it region by region, see how it works, right? I mean, that's how, for example, like when we did, like SEO tests are similar, I would think, where you're kind of doing them region by region. And then what we used to do at Trulia and Attila was run them state by state and then do A/B tests to see how it performs. Yeah, but I haven't actually had many cases where I wouldn't do an A/B test.
I would like to know more about marketing. I mean, how did you decompose and set your priorities? Is it like you were analyzing what all various resources or channels which were bringing traffic to your product, and then you might be looking like which is most advantageous or least beneficial, and then what is the target, like the one which is most advantageous to empower that one, or the least advantageous to raise that one? I mean, what is more focused thing there?
Yeah, I think you break down the funnel into all different entry points. Like there's always path reports within whatever tool you use, whether it's Google Analytics or whatever. You look at path reports, and then you can kind of see what the percentage conversion for each of the paths are, and you can find out which one is going to result in the highest absolute value for the number of, you're either looking for visitors, you're looking for leads, I'm not sure, but you can look at it that way and see what's the biggest impact you're going to have.
You are able to figure out the highest value. You are not going to touch that for a while because this is what ultimately giving you enough sufficient revenues, right? So whatever the lower things are, you might try to focus in those to raise them up.
It depends on if the one with the highest number, like it's a highest number, absolute number of people coming in through one path. If it's a low conversion percentage, then you probably want to improve that, because even improving that by 5 or 10%. Will get you higher than improving another one by 50%. So it's really, it's like a call, but you have to see based on your funnel. But I usually go with whatever's the lowest hanging fruit. If I can improve something by 5%, I can get you like 20K more people instead of going up another one by 50%, and you get like 2K. It doesn't really make sense, yeah.
It's a balance of all.
Yeah. Is there a question?
Can you talk us through your process of like how do you usually make a non-strategy?
Sorry, what?
Can you talk us through your process of how do you make a non-strategy?
North Star.
I think the North Star metric, I think, is all about, again, OKR. So like your team, you form a pod, right? Then you have, your pod is usually formed around a product feature or it's a function. And so when you have that product feature or the function, you, like, for me, it was receipts, right? So for us, it was like, the North Star is always gonna be like award rate, because it's literally always about, if a user submits a receipt, how many times are they gonna be awarded for it? So like, I think you could go back to your core product, like, what's your value prop? What are you providing to the user? There has to be something that you're providing to the user, and then that is what your North Star should be. At the end of the day, your feature does not work like a North Star. So like if for receipts, if the award rate is like 5%, then no one's gonna use the receipt feature. So that's kind of how I think about it.
You mentioned very new languages. I don't know any programming language. What should you start with? If you wanted to start learning the language, what's the most relevant or applicable language that you start with?
So I was more talking about like different functions, like if you're talking to a marketing person or with like a salesperson. But yeah, I mean, for me, I haven't coded in like 6-7 years, but so I can't really speak to that. But I feel like for me, what helps me with working with engineers is knowing like SQL, understanding like how data helps me a lot with engineering, because no one really argues with data. There's nothing really to talk about. It's like it's there, it's what the truth is. That's it.